All right, turn to Proverbs 10 and verse 15. Proverbs 10:15. Interesting thing about studying the Proverbs is that in many cases, each from week to week, it's an entirely different topic because Solomon just kind of jumps around. He doesn't, and for the most part, there's not a continual topic for many verses in a row. So we're going to look at wealth tonight and how the rich man views his wealth and the consequences of the lack of wealth for the poor. Proverbs 10 and verse 15 says, "The rich man's wealth is his strong city. The destruction of the poor is their poverty." So we'll look at that first part first. The rich man's wealth is his strong city. And this phrase, as is the case with a number of other ones in the Proverbs, as a matter of fact, at least two or three in this chapter here, this phrase is repeated, almost verbatim or verbatim, in Proverbs 18:11, which is, to me, emphasizing its importance. Proverbs 18 and verse 11 says, "The rich man's wealth is his strong city, and is an high wall in his own conceit." And I'm going to get back to this verse in a little bit, so I'll reserve comment until that time. But all I really wanted to do is just point out that this phrase is used twice in here, as was "the prating fool shall fall." That one was used twice. And as I was just looking back here, "violence covereth the mouth of the wicked." That one was used twice as well. And there might have even been another one. So it says the rich man's wealth is his strong city. And so we're talking metaphorically here. The rich man's wealth is literal. This is his riches, his silver, his gold, his house, his possessions, whatever. And his wealth is likened unto a strong city, which is metaphorical because it's his wealth isn't actually his strong city, but it's like a strong city, as a strong city. So if we look in the scripture and we find out what a strong city is, then that'll tell us some things about how the rich man views his wealth. And as we look through the scripture, we'll see that a strong city is a place of protection and provision. And I'll give you an example. I'll give you a couple of examples of strong cities in the Bible. The first one is back in 2 Chronicles 11:11 through 12. And this was speaking of Solomon's son Rehoboam when he took the kingdom, the southern kingdom of Judah, which was comprised of Judah and Benjamin. And he built some cities, and he built some strong cities. 2 Chronicles 11:11 through 12. It says, "And he fortified the strongholds and put captains in them and store of victual," which is food, "and of oil and wine. And in every several city he put shields and spears and made them exceeding strong, having Judah and Benjamin on his side." So he built cities and made them exceeding strong. So that, to me, would say he built strong cities, right? And we can learn some things about strong cities here just from this verse. They're fortified, which means they have walls around them. They have defense, right? They'd be hard to break into. They have store of food, victual, wine and oil, so the necessities of life, because in those days, if a city got besieged, you had to have a lot of food in the city because nothing was coming in or out, and you had to be self-sufficient. So a strong city would have defense, it would have food and drink, and it also had defensive weapons in it. He put shields and spears and made them exceeding strong. So a strong city is fortified and well supplied with food and weapons. Okay, so it's a place where you can find protection and provision. And this is what the rich man's wealth is to him. It's a form of protection and provision. Provision's obvious. If you have money, you can buy food, you can buy shelter, you can buy, you know, whatever you need for provision. And you can also buy protection. You know, if you're wealthy, you can have security systems, you can have bodyguards. If you're really wealthy, you can have all kinds of things. You have gated driveways, and you can protect yourself with your wealth. And this is what it is for the wealthy man. And even if he doesn't have those physical things, his money in his mind is that protection around him. He really doesn't have anything to worry about because he's got lots of money. And like I said before, and I got from somebody else, if you can write a check to solve a problem, it's not a problem. So for the rich guy, he's not worried about anything. because he is protected and provided for by his money. So he thinks. That's what he thinks, right? He's not necessarily so. He might be until God takes it away, or until some stronger man than he comes and takes it from him, or, you know, the government
crashes.
The economy crashes, the stock market crashes, the government comes after him, the IRS, you know, is auditing him, or whatever. I mean, any number of things. A tornado blows it all away, or whatever. I mean, any number of things could happen. And that's why you don't want to trust in that stuff, as we'll get into here in a minute. But let's keep looking at these strong cities a bit. A strong city is hard to defeat. Proverbs 18 and verse 19. Proverbs 18 and verse 19. It says, a brother offended is harder to be won than a strong city, and their contentions are like the bars of a castle. Now, we'll get into what this verse is talking about here in a few years, but a brother offended is harder to be won than a strong city, right? So this tells us that a strong city is hard to be won or hard to be defeated, right? If you got a city that is fortified with a good wall and lots of provisions that you can hold out for years, and you've got defensive positions up there, and it's hard for the enemy to break in, right? It's a hard thing to overcome. And that's what the rich man's wealth is to him in his mind. I am protected. I've got this wall around me. Nobody can harm me. I can just be at ease. I'm not nothing to worry about. That's what it is in his mind. Let's look at another example of a strong city, and that was the city of Tyre. Joshua 19 and verse 29. Joshua 19 and verse 29. This verse will just tell us that Tyre was a strong city, and then we'll read more about it later on in the Bible. Joshua 19:29 says, and then the coast turneth to Ramah and to the strong city Tyre. This is just describing borders. We don't need to get into that. But the strong city Tyre. Now, the Bible actually has a lot to say about Tyre. It was quite a city in its day. It was a center of commerce. And it was actually destroyed. It was prophesied that it would be, that it would be scraped clean. It was built on a rock, like a rock bed right at the sea. And it would all be scraped off right into the sea, the whole thing, everything in it, all the buildings, all the everything. They just plowed it right off into the sea, and it would be used for fishermen to hang their nets on. And that's what happened historically. That city was never rebuilt again, at least in biblical times. I don't know if it has been now or not. But anyway, if you turn to Isaiah 23, and we'll just look at a few verses here, starting in verse 1, we'll see here that Tyre was a strong city known for its wealth and commerce. Isaiah 23 and verse 1. Just to show you, this chapter is about the city of Tyre. It says, the burden of Tyre, and that's all we really need from that. The burden of Tyre. And then we go down in verse 3. It says, and by great waters, the seed of Sihor, the harvest of the river, is her revenue, and she is a mart of nations. A mart of nations. You think about Walmart. Walmart is the mart of towns, right? You'll have a Walmart in the towns surrounding it, especially in a rural community. It's the mart of the town. Everybody goes to the Walmart, right, to buy, not really to sell, but to buy, to get everything they need. Tyre was like that when it came to the nations. All nations came to Tyre, and there was this huge trade going on. And you can read about it in Ezekiel 27, and I'll just look at a couple of verses in there. I'm not going to read the whole chapter to you. But before we go there, if you look in verse 8 here of Isaiah 23, it says, who hath taken this counsel against Tyre, the crowning city, whose merchants are princes, whose traffickers are the honorable of the earth. So this was a city renowned for its merchant, for its merchants and its trade. And if you go over to Ezekiel 27, we'll just look at just a couple of things here. And it's interesting that this city of Tyre or Tyrus, which is the same city described here in chapter 27, is also prophesied against. The king of Tyrus is prophesied against in Ezekiel 28. And you know who is behind the king of Tyrus? Lucifer. Because when you look in chapter 28, verses 12 through 19, which I'm not going to read, but this is one of the prophecies of the fall of Lucifer. But the Lord is speaking to the animating spirit behind Tyrus, and he's talking about what happened to Lucifer, to the devil who's animating this king of Tyrus. So it's interesting here. This is one of the major cities of commerce, and the king is inspired by none other than Lucifer. And that tells you a lot of the major cities of commerce, their governor, their mayors, their governors, the presidents of the countries that are major countries of commerce, like the U.S., like, you know, some of the European countries and China and Japan and all those. Who do you think is behind those? Princes, principalities and powers, the devil and his angels. But anyway, that's a side note. In Ezekiel 27, I'm just going to pick up just a couple of verses here just to show you the extent of the commerce that happened in Tyre. Let's just look at verse 12. Tarshish was thy merchant by reason of the multitude of thy of all kind of riches. With silver, iron, tin, and lead they traded in thy fairs. Javel, Tubal, and Meshech, they were thy merchants. They traded in the persons of men and vessels of brass in thy market. So they got commodities. They got a slave trade going on there. They of the house of Togarma traded in thy fairs with horses and horsemen and mules. They got livestock being, you know, going in and out of there. The men of Dedan were thy merchants. Many isles were merchandise of thine hand. They brought thee for a present horns of ivory and ebony. So we're talking about very precious things. Ivory and ebony were, you know, top dollar things. And then you go on, I could just keep going, but in the next verse you got there, emeralds and purple, broidered work, fine linen, coral and agate, all these precious stones and things. All this money was just coming in and out of Tyre. This place was a very rich and wealthy place. Not only was it rich and wealthy, it had strongholds also. If you turn back to Isaiah, keep your finger in Ezekiel, but turn back to Isaiah 23 and verse 11. Just giving you an idea of what a strong city is and why Solomon says the rich man's wealth is his strong city. It makes a lot of sense. Isaiah 23 and verse 11 says, he stretched out his hand over the sea. He shook the kingdoms. The earth, the Lord hath given a commandment against the merchant city to destroy the strongholds thereof. So it was a defended city. It had strongholds, which are defenses to protect it against enemies. And then if you turn back over to Ezekiel 26, 4 and 12, we'll see likewise that it was a strong city. Ezekiel 26 and verse 4, and they shall destroy the walls of Tyrus and break down her towers. See, this is a walled city. The cities had towers in them. Those are where people would watch for enemies coming. That's where engines of war were located and weapons where they could defend the city. They could defend the city with. I will also scrape, and here's the prophecy I mentioned a minute ago. I will also scrape her dust from her and make her like the top of a rock. It shall be a place for the spreading of nets in the midst of the sea, for I have spoken it, saith the Lord God, and it shall become a spoil to the nations. Now I'm sure the proud people that lived in Tyre never thought anything could happen to our city. We are the wealthiest, probably the wealthiest city on the planet, from that description there in chapter 27. And God says, I'm going to scrape you clean like a rock. There's not going to be one thing left. And people think, oh, nothing could ever happen to the U.S. Oh, real easily. Especially in the age of nuclear war. Mm-hmm. I mean, this nation could be turned into a big sheet of glass in no time. Like, it talks about in the Bible, in 1 hour, Babylon being destroyed. Some people take Babylon to be the USA and 1 hour destroyed with nuclear war. I don't know if that's, you know, I don't necessarily think Babylon is the USA is what was being prophesied by the term Babylon there. But anyway, if that's to be taken literally and Babylon is destroyed in an hour, you could destroy a whole nation in an hour today, you know, very easily. Yes, hopefully not. But yeah, if that does happen, though, if you happen to be at the epicenter of it, you really won't feel it anyway. So, you know, you just be vaporized. So
it's going to happen to the rich people who have barracks or something?
Oh, yeah, they're all there underground.
Yeah, what's going to happen to that?
Well, they're probably going to...
That's their stronghold.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, they...
didn't know to get into the stronghold.
Well, I don't know how you get in there in time, but even if they do, okay. So you can live underground for years and, yeah. and you know, live it up. Have a good time down there, I guess, but I don't know. Hmm. Not for me. But anyway, and then verse 12. And they shall make a spoil of riches and make a prey of thy merchandise, and they shall break down thy walls and destroy thy pleasant houses, and they shall lay thy stones and thy timber and thy dust in the midst of the water. And that's what they did. They actually just scraped it off and pushed it right into the sea. But what history tells us anyway, literal fulfillment of that. But the point was there, it had strong walls, it had defenses, and that didn't stop the Lord from destroying that place. And the rich man's wealth, he may think of it like that, and he may have these big walls built up around him, but it won't stop the Lord from destroying him if he wants to. You remember that rich guy in Luke chapter 12, and he tore down his barns, and he built bigger barns, and he's, you know, what shall I do? I'm filled with goods. I know what I'll do. I'll tear down my barns and build bigger ones, and I'll say to my soul, soul, thou hast laid up for many years. Eat and drink, and take thine ease. And the Lord says, thou fool, your life's taken from you tonight. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, his riches were his strong city, and guess what? He died. And how much of that did he take with him to hell? None of it. None of it. So the rich man's wealth is a high wall of protection in his own mind. Let's take a look at that verse that we looked at a minute ago. And I'll define a word for you here in Proverbs 18 and verse 11. Proverbs 18:11 says, the rich man's wealth is his strong city and is a high wall in his own conceit. Now, when we think of conceit today, if you say somebody is conceited, you're saying you think that they're proud, right? They're full of themselves. And that's not really what the word conceit means. Conceit is that which is conceived in the mind, a conception, notion, idea, thought, device. So it's just simply a thought, right? It's just your own ideas. So the rich man's wealth is his strong city and a high wall in his own thoughts, in his own mind. It's his defense. It's his protection. And this is why the wealthy trust in their riches to protect them and provide for them instead of God. And I'll give you a verse which will show us this in Psalm 52 and verse 7. This is why it's really hard for a rich man to enter into the kingdom of God. That's what Jesus said. It's easier for a camel to go through the eye of a needle than it is for a rich man to enter into the kingdom of God. Because they trust in their riches. They don't trust in God. And they don't want to have to give up anything, and they don't want to have any God telling them what they're supposed to do with their money, or that they shouldn't be trusting in it, or that they're no better than the poor man that's sitting right next to him in the assembly. They don't like that, right? They like to be honored and, you know, esteemed and held up, and when you come to a true church, well, I don't care how much money you have. Yeah, sit over there. You don't get a special seat, right? It doesn't matter who you are. I don't care if you're a millionaire or a billionaire. You're no different than anybody else. You're going to stoop down and wash some guy's feet that doesn't have enough money to pay for the shoes you're wearing. It doesn't matter. Psalm 52 and verse 7 says, lo, this is the man that made not God his strength, but trusted in the abundance of his riches and strengthened himself in his wickedness. I think there's a correlation there. Trusting in the abundance of his wickedness, of his riches, and strengthening himself in his wickedness. Mm-hmm. It's a high wall in his own conceit. He's powerful. He can do whatever he wants. He's never going to get in trouble. He can bribe the judges. He can pay off the politicians. He can, you know, pay off the cops, right? He can get away with whatever he wants, so he thinks. These people think that their riches and possessions are going to last forever. Look at Psalm 49, just back a page. Verses 6 and 11. It says, they that trust in their wealth, it didn't say they that have wealth, nothing wrong with having wealth, trusting in it's the problem. They that trust in their wealth and boast themselves in the multitude of their riches. Verse 11, their inward thought is that their houses shall continue forever in their dwelling places to all generations. They call their lands after their own names. They think it's going to last forever. And they, you know, there's lots of lands and places that are named after rich people, and lots of foundations and organizations and so on. They still do that today. Can you think of any famous rich person that puts his name all over everything? Trump Towers, Trump Hotels, Trump Media Company, Trump on his airplane. I mean, there's nothing new under the sun here. They think their monies, their possessions are going to last forever, but their wealth is not going to save them from death. That's what this psalm goes on to say in verses 7 through 10 and 12 through 14. It says, none of them can by any means redeem his brother nor give to God a ransom for him. For the redemption of their soul is precious and it ceaseth forever. That he should still live forever and not see corruption. For he seeth that wise men die, likewise the fool and the brutish person perish and leave their wealth to others. Can't redeem themselves. Can't redeem him or his brother. You can't purchase your soul with money. That's what Peter says. You're not redeemed with silver and gold from the vain conversation received by tradition from the elders, but with the precious blood of Christ as a lamb without spot and without blemish, Peter says. Verses 12 through 14. Nevertheless, man being in honor abideth not. He is like the beasts that perish. This their way is their folly, yet their posterity approve of their sayings. Like sheep they are laid in the grave. Death shall feed on them, and the upright shall have dominion over them in the morning. The resurrection morning, the upright, the just, at the resurrection of the just, those little children of God that these guys trampled all over, they are going to have dominion over them. You know, God says the saints are going to judge the world. Saints are going to have part in that final judgment. And their beauty shall be consumed in the grave from their dwelling. So it's not their wealth is not going to save them from death, and nor will it go with them into the next world. Verses 16 and 17. Be not thou afraid when one is made rich, when the glory of his house is increased. For when he dieth, he shall carry nothing away. His glory shall not descend after him. So, yeah, his riches are his strong city now in his mind in this life, but it's not always going to be that way. And it may not even last till the end of his life, but it's definitely not going to go beyond that. So trusting in their riches will cause rich men to fall rather than to be established. Proverbs 11 and verse 28. Because what they think is they've got their riches and they trust in it and nothing's going to happen. They're going to be protected. But what actually happens is they trust in their riches and then it causes them to fall. It has the opposite effect that they plan. Proverbs 11 and verse 28. He that trusteth in his riches shall fall, but the righteous shall flourish as a branch. So we always want to be careful about that. And we don't have to be rich to fall under this condemnation or to have our wealth be our strong city. Because, I mean, it depends on what your everybody's definition of rich is different. But, you know, you don't have to be rich to trust in your wealth. You know, you could have enough laid up to take care of you for a few months and think, I got nothing to worry about. I got enough wealth laid up for a couple of months if something happens. Well, you don't want to trust in that either, right? Because a couple of months go by in a heartbeat anyway. I mean, that's nothing. But any one of us, no matter how rich or not rich we are, could fall into this trap. So we all want to be admonished by it.
But you wouldn't want to worry about not having enough as well, right? Is that what I'm saying? It's like you don't want to think, oh, I have enough, I have 6 months worth supply of food, but you also don't want to keep worrying about, oh, is this going to be enough? Should I keep stacking up food and so on? It's like, I think there should be a balance.
No, there should be a balance.
Don't overthink it.
Not overthinking. Yeah. It's like, okay, this is all I can store up, and I'm trusting that the Lord will.
Right. Once you've done what you can,
right.
You know, the ant's wise, it lays up in the summer for the harvest time, and but when you've done what you can, then, you trust the Lord. Yep, that's right. So it's not wrong to have riches. but we must never trust in them. Rather, we must trust in God alone. And that's really what it comes down to. It's not the money. It's not the possessions. It's trusting in those things. 1 Timothy 6 and verse 17. You could have some homeless bum that somebody just gave him $10 and he's got enough to feed him for the next day, and he could trust in that and think, I got nothing to worry about until tomorrow night. And he could be just as guilty as Warren Buffett is, thinking, well, I've got enough laid up to keep me secure probably for the next 100,000 years, right? They both could be equally in trouble with God if they're trusting in their wealth, no matter what it is. 1 Timothy 6 and verse 17. Charge them that are rich in this world, that they be not high-minded, nor trust in uncertain riches, but in the living God who giveth us richly all things to enjoy. So he didn't say, charge them that are rich in this world, and tell them, look, you guys shouldn't have all that money. That's wrong. You ought to just give it away to everybody else, because everybody should be equal. He didn't say that at all. He said, charge them that are rich in this world, that they be not high-minded, and trust in those riches. And it calls them uncertain riches because the Bible says that riches make themselves wings and they fly away as an eagle toward heaven. And they do. They can be gone very, very quickly. Now, the rich man's wealth is his strong city or his strong tower. He's got the wrong strong city and the wrong strong tower. The strong city that we ought to have in our own mind is the Lord. The Lord should be our strong city slash tower. That's where true protection, provision, and peace is found. Now look at Proverbs 18 and verse 10. Proverbs 18 and verse 10. I got a few verses here which will establish this. Proverbs 18:10 says, the name of the Lord is a strong tower. The righteous runneth into it and is safe. That's where true safety is found, not in one's riches. No matter what, it doesn't matter if you're a rich man or a poor man, the Lord should still be your strong tower. You should still be running to Him to be safe, no matter if you do have enough money saved up to take care of yourself for the next 50 years. The Lord must still be our strong tower and our safety. Psalm 31, verses 19 through 24. Psalm 31, verses 19 through 24. It says, O how great is thy goodness, which thou hast laid up for them that fear thee, which thou hast wrought for them that trust in thee before the sons of men. Thou shalt hide them in the secret of thy presence from the pride of man. Thou shalt keep them secretly in the pavilion, in a pavilion from the strife of tongues. Blessed be the Lord, for he hath showed me his marvelous kindness in a strong city. For I said in my haste, I am cut off from before thine eyes. Nevertheless, thou heardest the voice of my supplications when I cried unto thee. O love the Lord, all ye his saints, for the Lord preserveth the faithful and plentifully rewardeth the proud doer. Be of good courage, and he shall strengthen your heart, all ye that hope in the Lord. There is your strong city. You trust in the Lord, you go to him for protection, and he will provide, he will preserve the faithful. He will strengthen your heart. He'll take care of you. Now look at Isaiah 26, 1 through 4. Isaiah 26, 1 through 4. It says, in that day shall this song be sung in the land of Judah. We have a strong city. Salvation will God appoint for walls and bulwarks. You see, this is the true strong city. Salvation, the salvation that God provides, both eternal and temporal, are like walls and bulwarks, these big fortifications built up around us to protect us. Open ye the gates, that the righteous nation, which keepeth the truth, may enter in. Thou wilt keep him in perfect peace, whose mind is stayed on thee, because he trusteth in thee. Trust ye in the Lord forever. For the Lord Jehovah is everlasting strength. There's where our provision and our peace comes from trusting in the Lord, from getting within the walls, his bulwarks, his towers. And one more, Psalm 61, 1 through 4. You might recognize this psalm. It was our memory verse not that long ago, our memory passage. It says, "Hear my cry, O God, attend unto my prayer. From the end of the earth will I cry unto thee when my heart is overwhelmed. Lead me to the rock that is higher than I." Tyrus was built upon a rock, and that didn't work out so well for them. But when you go to the Lord, the rock, you're not going to be scraped off into the sea. "For thou hast been a shelter for me and a strong tower from the enemy. I will abide in thy tabernacle forever. I will trust in the covert of thy wings, Selah." God's a shelter and a strong tower, a place of protection and refuge. All right, now let's look at the second part of that proverb. The destruction of the poor is their poverty. This is kind of interesting. I was looking at the different ways in which poverty destroys, and I came up with a whole bunch of things, basically just looking at all the passages, mostly in Proverbs, which talked about the poor and talked about poverty, and I just looked at all the things that it says about it and categorized them and thought, wow, poverty is very destructive. Poverty is destructive, and it reduces the poor to a very low condition. Let me just define poverty here for you. Poverty is the condition of having little or no wealth or material possessions, indigence, destitution, want in various degrees. See poor. Poor is having few or no material possessions, wanting means to procure the comforts or the necessities of life. Needy, indigent, destitute, specifically so destitute as to be dependent upon gifts or allowances for subsistence. In common use, expressing various degrees from absolute want to straitened circumstances or limited means, relatively to station, as, quote, a poor gentleman, a poor professional man, clergyman, scholar, clerk, etc. The opposite of rich or wealthy. So it says the destruction of the poor is their poverty. In other words, the poverty of the poor destroys them. Right, that is the agent. Their poverty is the agent of destruction for the poor. Destruction is the action of demolishing a building or a structure of any kind, of pulling to pieces, reducing to fragments, undoing, wasting, rendering useless, putting to an end, or doing away with anything material or immaterial, demolition. So poverty pulls to pieces the lives of the poor. It demolishes them, brings them to nothing, reduces them down to fragments. And if you've ever seen a truly poor person, which there aren't very many of them in this country, but if you've ever seen a truly poor person, like look at some of the people over there in Africa and people that live in this squalor in places, and you see people that have been pulled to pieces and totally destitute. Poverty destroys like an armed attacker. Proverbs 6 and verse 11. Proverbs 6:11. "So so shall thy poverty come as one that traveleth, and thy want as an armed man." This is talking to the lazy guy that just keeps sleeping. His poverty is going to come like an armed man, like an attacker. It's going to destroy. So let's look at some of the ways that poverty destroys. Poverty puts the poor in a condition which requires pity and mercy from others. Actually, we'll get to the destruction part next. Let's just look at a few verses here, though, that shows the condition that the poor are put in because of their poverty. First of all, it puts them in a condition where they cry out for help. Proverbs 21 and verse 13. Now, many of these verses, I'm not going to get into what they're teaching us. I'll get into what they're teaching us later. I'm just going to take a little bit from it and extrapolate a point, and then we'll dive into it more deeply in the future. Proverbs 21 and verse 13, "Whoso stoppeth his ears at the cry of the poor, he also shall cry himself and shall not be heard." So the poor cry out for help. is the point. The poor need mercy, Proverbs 14 and verse 21. This is not an enviable place to be. I don't know about you, but I don't want to be in a place where I need to have mercy or where I'm crying out for help. If it ever comes to that, I hope somebody has mercy on me. But I don't want to be there. I don't think anybody does. That's why it says in Proverbs to give me poverty, nor neither poverty nor riches, right? Nobody wants to be poor. Proverbs 14 and verse 21 says, "He that despiseth his neighbor sinneth, but he that hath mercy on the poor, happy is he." So once again, this verse tells me that the poor need mercy, right? And the man that does so is blessed, but they're in a position where they need that. Proverbs 14 and verse 31, "He that oppresseth the poor reproacheth his maker, but he that honoreth him hath mercy on the poor." He has mercy on them because they're in need of it. And the poor are an object of pity. Proverbs 19 and verse 17. Nobody wants to be an object of pity. At least I don't think so anyway. Actually, I think some people do. Some people do like to be pitied. I don't like that. Let me put it that way. I don't like, "Oh, poor you. I feel so bad for you." Just save it. I don't want to hear that. Proverbs 19 and verse 17. "He that hath pity upon the poor lendeth unto the Lord, and that which he hath given will he pay him again." This is an exhortation to have pity on the poor. All I want from it is the poor need pity. They're in a pitiful state. Poverty puts the poor in a position of weakness, which makes them vulnerable to attacks which cause destruction. So now we're going to get into the different ways in which poverty destroys. So it puts a person in a position of weakness, and then they can easily be destroyed by attacks. The poor are targets of robbers, which will bring them to destruction. Proverbs 22 and verse 22. It says, "Rob not the poor, because he is poor, neither oppress the afflicted in the gate." Now you think, why would you want to rob the poor? They don't have anything. Mm-hmm. Well, they're easy targets. They have something, right? And it's a lot easier to rob a poor guy than a rich guy. Right, you can easily walk up to a poor guy's house and kick the door in and take whatever he has. Try walking up to a rich guy's house, you know, that's some fortified place and with guards and whatever. You're not going to, you know, it's not going to be as easy. He has all kinds of means to protect himself. Where the poor guy, he didn't have anything. The poor are even oppressed by other poor people, which leaves them with nothing. And this is exceptionally sad. That's an insult to injury, getting robbed by another poor guy. Proverbs 28 and verse 3 says, "A poor man that oppresseth the poor is like a sweeping rain which leaveth no food." He's already got nothing, and some other guy that has nothing comes along and takes the little bit of nothing that he has, and now he really has nothing. The poor get devoured by wicked people. Proverbs 30 and verse 14. "There is a generation whose teeth are as swords and their jaw teeth as knives, to devour the poor from off the earth and the needy from among men." And we're living in that generation. There are people out there that devour the poor from off the earth. Televangelists do it all the time. You got these poor old ladies that, you know, have a pittance, and these shysters talk them into sending all the money that they have to them. Old people get swindled out of tons of money. This happens all the time. I've seen reports about this, investigations about this, and it just blows your mind, the stupidity of people that fall for these con men and send them money and come up with some story. And it's just amazing that people have no discernment. But when you get older, you don't have as much discernment. You know, when you get in your 80s, you know, your cognitive function is way down, and it's really easy to be screwed over by somebody. So anyway, that's the kind of people these types go after.
In that case, though, like that, is it fair really to call it stupidity?
Well, not for the old people, yeah. But like the people that I saw in this documentary, and it was just like, how? I mean, it wasn't an elderly lady. She wasn't young, but maybe in her 60s or something. And I just thought, how could you possibly be that dumb? It was just, and I don't remember the situation now, but I just remember being blown away at how you could ever have fallen for something like that.
Would you consider the fact that a lot of families, like a lot of young children died in Africa because of these rich people basically devouring these young children, forcing them to get the inoculation?
Oh, yeah.
They're like guinea pigs, these poor African families.
Oh, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation went over there and inoculated all these African kids and killed a whole ton of them. And
that's devouring and, the poor.
Yeah, because there's a ton of money in that. Because those vaccines are not free, right? Somebody's paying for them, and they don't mind that. I mean, think about the Pharisees that devoured widows' houses, right? Same kind of thing. This has been going on forever. Another way that the poor are destroyed is that wicked rulers tyrannize the poor because they can't resist them. Proverbs 28 and verse 15. This is why governments want to keep their people poor, at least the most of the people poor, because they're way easier to control. You take a country with a strong middle class that has a decent amount of wealth, and they can't be pushed around. But you take people that are poor and destitute and they're all in the government dole, what are you going to do when you're on the dole? You're not going to fight back at all, right? That's the way they want people. They want to get you on the dole. Proverbs 28 and verse 15 says, as a roaring lion and a raging bear, so is a wicked ruler over the poor people. They're defenseless. Ecclesiastes 8 and verse 5. 5:8, thank you. Ecclesiastes 5 and verse 8. If thou seest the oppression of the poor, and violent perverting of judgment and justice in a province, marvel not at the matter, for he that is higher than the highest regardeth, and there be higher than they. The oppression of the poor and violent perverting of judgment and justice. If you're poor, you can't afford a lawyer. And even if they provide you with everybody gets counsel, and you get some lame guy that graduated law school with a D or something like that, and he's working for the government, and he doesn't care about you, right? Mm-hmm. You can't afford to have good counsel, a good lawyer. So the poor can be tyrannized and just run roughshod over by tyrannical rulers because they have no power to resist. But here's another way that poverty destroys. And this you might not have thought about this before. Poverty destroys social relationships. It says in Proverbs 14:20 that the poor are hated by their own neighbors. And this is pretty sad if you think about it. But and it's human nature. Would the average person want to hang out with their wealthy neighbor or their poor neighbor that has nothing? That can't reciprocate anything, right? The average person, I mean, let's face it, most of us would probably, if we're not thinking like Christians and we're not stepping back and thinking about what we should do versus what we want to do, most of us would rather hang out with the wealthy neighbor than with the poor neighbor, right? I remember, and this was just a really interesting thing. Wayne was here. You'll know what I'm talking about. When we went to a funeral and we were hanging out with some well-to-do people. And, I'll admit, it was kind of fun. It was kind of fun hanging out with wealthy people and saying, hey, get the filet mignon and get the U.S. to get the choice one. Get the best one there because that's the better one.
Uncomfortable. Like, boy,
yeah. Really?
Yeah.
I mean, it's different because it's not, you're not, but I realized, and they were nice people.
But they were nice, and
I knew, this is never going to happen again. Mm-hmm. But, and those verses were going through my mind where the rich hath many friends, and I thought, yeah, it's fun. Sitting there and whining and dining and whatever and rubbing shoulders with wealthy people. Yeah, it's fun. It's not going to happen again, but enjoy it for the hour that you have it or whatever. But that's human nature. People would much rather hang out with the wealthy than they would hang out with the poor. That's just the way it is. Proverbs 14 and verse 20. The poor is hated even of his own neighbor, but the rich hath many friends. His own neighbor can't stand the guy because he's poor and he's got nothing to give. There's no reciprocation there. There's, You know, you could invite him over and put on a nice meal for him, but can he do the same thing for you? Most people are like, I don't want to do that. But you know what Jesus taught when you have a feast? Invite the poor, the maimed, right? You invite the people that can't repay you. But you know why he told us to do that? Because we wouldn't do it if he didn't tell us to. That's why he told us to do that. Because that's not human nature. It's not human nature to want to hang out with the poor.
You keep talking about wanting, a lot of people not wanting to hang out with the poor. And I keep saying, I kept thinking, I don't mind hanging out with the poor. I don't like hanging out at someone else's pigsty-like house more than, a dirty house.
Pigsty.
I would rather hang out with the poor than hang out with a person with a dirty house.
Well,
that's what I've been thinking
all along.
And
poverty and pigsties don't necessarily go together.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen some really nice houses that were pigsties. You know, and there are some poor people that keep a very nice, clean house.
It's not fancy.
I'd much rather hang out with poor people than rich people in a pigsty. And I've seen some pretty nice houses that are nasty. Yeah. Yeah. Neighbors will separate from and exclude the poor. Proverbs 19 and verse 4. And let me tell you what, I'm not speaking from experience here, but I know this is true. If you were wealthy and you were a man of means, you end up with a certain group of friends that are similar wealth, of wealth. And if you become poor for some reason, something happens and you fall in hard times,
you like a hot thing.
Oh yeah, they're not going to have anything to do with you, right? You are going to be off on your own. You're going to be despised, and they don't want you hanging around anymore.
You like a hot thing.
Yep, and that is the truth.
And it's the same opposite too. If you all of a sudden you win the, $50 million lottery. All of a sudden, all these good rich fans want you to invest your money.
Oh yeah,
They want to invest money.
Right? Yeah. Oh yeah, you'll have lots of new friends if you hit the lotto, and lots of long lost family members you never knew you had, all kinds of cousins and yeah.
It's some huge percent of people who win the lottery who say that it ruined their life.
Oh yeah, I totally believe it, totally believe it. Let's see, Proverbs 19 and verse 4. Wealth maketh many friends, but the poor is separated from his neighbor. They just don't want anything to do with him. The poor are sometimes even hated by their own family and forsaken by their friends, and that's extra sad. Proverbs 19 and verse 7. All the brethren of the poor do hate him. How much more do his friends go far from him? He pursueth them with words, yet they are wanting to him. His brethren, that's his brothers and sisters, they don't want anything to do with him. His friends go far from him, and he's trying to pursue him. He's calling him up and say, hey, you guys want to go out and do something? I'm busy. I can't. Sorry. Maybe another time. And they'd rather hang out with their rich friends, with their wealthy friends. It's not right, but that's just the way it is. And that's why it says the destruction of the poor is their poverty, right? It destroys social relationships. It invites oppression and ridicule, which are destructive. The poor are often the target of oppression. Proverbs 14 and verse 31. He that oppresseth the poor reproacheth his maker, but he that honoreth him hath mercy on the poor. See, he that oppresseth the poor. So their poverty invites oppression. Because, like I said before, easy targets. Proverbs 22 and verse 16. He that oppresseth the poor to increase his riches, and he that giveth to the rich shall surely come to want. Once again, easy targets for oppression. And the poor are often mocked, which I wouldn't recommend doing this, because you're going to be in big trouble with God. You start mocking the poor. That is not a good idea. Mocking any less fortunate person, like a retarded person or anybody like that, you're going to get a beating from God, and I hope you get a beating from somebody else too. I hope if I ever see somebody mocking a poor person or mocking a retarded person, I would love to see him get a beat down. I wouldn't tell somebody to do it, but I would be smiling inside if he did.
You wouldn't be stopping it.
I would not. No, I wouldn't. People that mock unfortunate people need a beat down. And they'll get it. The Lord will make sure of that. Proverbs 17 and verse 5, "Whoso mocketh the poor reproacheth his maker, and he that is glad at calamity shall not be unpunished." You mock the poor, you mock the poor's maker. And he's like the big brother, you know, that won't tolerate that. My stepdad had a little brother with Down syndrome, and I'm pretty sure I remember hearing him giving the beat down to some people that were picking on his little brother when he was in school. And they deserved it, too. I'm sure they did. Here's another way that poverty can destroy the poor, and that is that poverty can cause a man to steal, which will bring him judgment from God and further financial destruction. Proverbs 37 through 9. Proverbs 37 through 9 says, "Two things have I required of thee, deny me them not before I die. Remove far from me vanity and lies, give me neither poverty nor riches. Feed me with food convenient for me, lest I be poor and deny thee and say, who is the Lord? Or lest I be poor and steal and take the name of my God in vain." So that's what can happen if you get poor and you get desperate enough, you might steal. And then you take God's name in vain. And that's not saying JC or GD. That is claiming to be a follower of God, calling on his name, saying, "I'm a follower of the Lord Jesus Christ," and then somebody says, "But you just stole that thing. You've taken the Lord's name in vain." And that will bring further financial destruction upon the poor. Proverbs 6, 30 through 31. Says Proverbs 6:30, "Men do not despise a thief if he steal to satisfy his soul when he is hungry. But if he be found, he shall restore sevenfold. He shall give all the substance of his house." So the poor guy, you know, men aren't going to despise him because they do feel bad for him. He stole to feed his soul. But if you get caught, you're going to lose all that you stole and everything else. And you're going to be in an even worse spot. The destruction of the poor is their poverty. And poverty brings misery. Proverbs 31 and verse 7. And you've probably seen pictures of truly poor people. You know, people on the street in cities where they're homeless and in the squalor that they're living in. And it does look miserable.
We have a lot of them in the Philippines.
Lots of them in the Philippines.
A lot of them.
And back from the
70s. Oh, yeah. But and sadly, here in the States, I think most of the people that are on the street that are living in abject poverty, they're there because they want to be. Mm-hmm.
I think sometimes.
I think that is true. Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe not in every case, but there are so many opportunities and programs that people could get off the street if they wanted to, and you know, homeless shelters that'll get you a job and get you back on your feet. There's a lot of people, they want to be there. And especially today, you know, you see these people standing at intersections with the sign. I was always skeptical of that stuff. I have zero time for that now. Mm-hmm. There are literally, I mean, those people, I see them in Liberty, sitting there in the main mm-hmm. things, and I'm thinking, I can look around here within a 100-yard radius, and I'll bet you there are literally 100 jobs that you could have right now. Mm-hmm. There are people that can't find anybody to work. They would pay you more than you're worth and probably hire you immediately. I have no time for that. I will not give one penny to somebody standing on a street corner today with all of the job openings. I don't want to hear it. If you can stand in 90-degree heat and endure that, you can obviously work somewhere doing something. I have no time for that.
Those people at that intersection in front of PetSmart, I see too much stuff from that group of people because they camped behind us for a couple of years and now they've got fence posts and stuff so they can't get their trucks back in there, so we're hoping that we won't have them this year. But like the super skinny woman who wears no clothes.
Oh, I haven't seen her.
Oh, she's there a lot. She hardly wears any clothes. Oh. But she and her dad came in not too long ago and blew $150 on dog food. And that night, I saw her begging for money on the street corner. Yeah. I'm like, you just blew $150 in my store on dog stuff, and you're standing on the street corner saying that you need money for food.
Yeah, I know. That's why I just don't.
That's a scam.
Yeah, mm-hmm. absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and in some ways, I'm kind of, I mean, now I know. It's like before I wasn't sure. I always looked at them and I thought, well, maybe they really are in need. And I've stopped sometimes and helped them. But now, I have no doubt.
Some of them are smoking. Some of them are on their phones.
Well, and I wouldn't, yeah. So I mean, if you're standing there on a smartphone, no, you're not getting my money. Sorry, no. Or smoking a cigarette, no, you're not getting any money. Okay, I don't think we got to Proverbs 31 and verse 7. Let him drink and forget his poverty and remember his misery no more. So yes, poverty and misery go hand in hand. So I will end it with this. Brethren, listen to and heed the sound instruction you received over the years on money management and a biblical work ethic, and avoid poverty and the destruction that it brings. I'll give you one last verse. Proverbs 13 and verse 18. Poverty and shame shall be to him that refuseth instruction, but he that regardeth reproof shall be honored. Some people get into poverty just because they just fall on hard times, just bad stuff happens, you know, the horrible sickness or natural disaster. But some people just get it because they just don't listen to good instruction and they just do stupid things. And you don't want to be one of them. I got a couple of quotes here I'm going to give you and I will be done. I found these today, just an article caught my eye, and I thought these quotes were really good. They're from Warren Buffett, who's, of course, I'm sure you all know who he is, fifth richest man in the world. He's a really interesting character. He lives in the same house that he's lived in for 58 years, I think. Not exactly a shack. I mean, it is like 6,500 square feet, but he paid $31,000 for it back in like 1958 or something like that. And probably added to it a little bit over the years, and you know, but anyway, but he lives in it's a $1 million house today. So $1 million house today in a city is pretty much not really that big of a deal anymore. I mean, that's like an above average house, but the guy is worth like $100 billion or something like that. Mm-hmm. He lives in basically a normal house. I mean, a normal house for a guy that, you know, has some money. He said he had a 2006 Cadillac that he drove until 2014 and then bought a newer one, still used. But, I mean, you know, drove this Cadillac for like 8 years or something like that. And $40-some thousand vehicle for a guy that's got $100 billion. He stops at McDonald's on his way to work every morning and gets a $2 and something or maybe $3 and something, depending on whether the market's up or down. He said, if the market's down, I go for the $2.68 sandwich. If the market's up, you know, I get the $3 one. He's probably kidding, I hope. Probably. But I mean, yeah, goes to McDonald's, gets his breakfast, somehow lived to be 91 years old. I don't know how in the world you can do that eating McDonald's every day. Apparently so. And, I mean, the guy, he uses coupons, I mean,
there's a reason he has stayed wealthy.
Yeah. Right. I mean, he's probably a little bit over the top as far as not enjoying some of his wealth. But,
I'm sorry. Does he have security in his property? At
yeah,
all?
He does. He does. Yeah, yeah. But just really interesting guy. Just kind of fascinating to me. But anyway, he said this, a couple of good ones. He said, if you buy things you don't need, you will soon sell things you need. Which I thought was pretty interesting. And then there's this one, and this one is gold. If people would just put this into practice, they'd be in good financial shape. Do not save what is left after spending, but spend what is left after saving. Do not save what is left after spending, but spend what is left after saving. Most people do it the opposite. Most people spend, and then if they have anything left over at the end of the month, then they save that. But people that actually will build wealth and will do well, they do just the opposite. They budget a certain amount. I'm going to save X percent or X amount. This gets saved, and whatever I have left over, then I'll spend. And if I don't have anything left over, I don't spend it. And instead of, if I don't have anything left over, I don't save it. So anyway, I just thought I would share those two things with you. I thought that those were pretty good. So next time we will pick it up with Proverbs 10 and verse 16. Just a quick note at the end of the sermon. The most important thing a believer in Jesus Christ can do is to be a member of one of God's true churches. If you're not already a member of one, go to pastorwagner.com/churches to see if there is a true church or other believers of like faith near you. That's pastorwagner.com/churches.